Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We have been talking about the first of the modes of expression of meaning by words, that is abhidha vritti. Vritti can understand as function, and the word shakti is also used, potency. Abhidha is just literal meaning. And we analyzed it that it can come by derivation or by a convention or by a combination of both. Then we considered special cases. First of all, then we analyzed that actual words used in language have parts. There's the base of a word, whether it's a noun or a verb, and then the inflections added to it. The inflections, not in isolation, but when connected to the base, contribute to the meaning, have their own contributions to the meaning, including the gender, the number, and the time of activity. These are all expressed. Upasargas also imply, although they don't, as upasargas, have any individual meanings, they do modify the meanings of the verbs they're added to, the roots they're added to. Then we have unadi sutras. But since unadi sutras are so variegated, there's not much of a pattern to them. So we don't consider meanings that are explainable by unadi sutras to really be yogika. They're just considered conventional. For example, there's derivation of gamer with the verb. In the Nadi Sutras explain that you take the verb gum and after that add the suffix do, and you get the word gao or cow, which by that derivation would mean gaukshete. That the literal meaning should be it lies down. The meaning should be it moves. A cow should be a moving thing. But then you have a sentence, statements about cows that involve just the opposite. If you say the cow's lying down, it's not moving. So there's a derivation, but the derivation is not supplying the actual used meaning. The meaning is understood to be just conventional, the actual meaning of the word cow. Even though there's a Nadi Sutra explaining supposedly explaining the derivation, it's not really explaining where the meaning came from. Okay, now we have samasas. They combine words in different forms of different kinds of samasas, and in each different kind of samas, there is a different focus of where important word. Yeah, in samasas, you have principal word, and then modifying or secondary words. And it's important for understanding any samasa to know the principal word. Is a nilat utpala, is it principally a nila or an utpala? What are we talking about? We're talking about a blue or a lotus. We're talking, first of all, about a lotus. And it happens to be blue is its quality. But if we're talking about chakrapani, we're not, first of all, talking about a chakra. We're talking about a pani. We're talking about a chakra in a pani of somebody. It's bahuvrihi, but it's also, first of all, an inverted karmadharya. So the main word is actually, the main idea is something is neither one of the words. It's Vishnu, who's not a chakra and is not a hand. He has a hand, and that hand has a chakra. Or there's a chakra in that hand. Locative. So we have to analyze the different kinds of samasas, how the meanings are sorted out. So Bhavrihi Anyapadartha Shakti, the main focus of the meaning is on something other than what's expressed by each of the two words in a Bahuvrihi. It's not much, it's not rice, it's somebody else who has a lot of rice. And there was two different kinds of Bahuvrihi samasas, those that express also the literally meaning and those that don't. A man that has a lot of rice, let's say Bahupaka is a man who does a lot of cooking. Bahur Pakaha Yena Saha. But he may not be cooking right now. Maybe he did finish all his cooking at 11 o'clock in the morning, and now it's the afternoon. So you're describing him as Bahupaka, but there's no paka there. So that's Avasambhagena. The literal meaning in this case is missing. In this context, is missing. He's a person who generally does a lot of cooking, but there's no cooking right now. But when we're talking about an example they gave, an example where it's just generally true that the thing, the literal thing, is there also. Like a dandi is a sannyasi who has a stick. Well, the stick is there. He's got his stick. He keeps it in his room, maybe, but he's got a stick. It's not missing. A suffix, not a samasa. But anyway. We have dvandva samasas, where both or all of the words involved in the dvandva are equally important. But you have two different kinds of dvandva samasas, the samaharya and the iteratara. In the samaharya, you consider the whole group of things as one unit, and therefore you put it into the neuter singular. And in the iteratara, you consider it as a group of individuals, and you count up how many individuals there are, and you check which genders there are, and you match it appropriately. But in both cases, all the words in the samasa are carrying the meaning. It's the sum of the meaning of all of them. He mentions that, suppose you have an iterator Dvandra Samas, Surya Chandrama Sao. Now that's a Vedic form of the dual. Or no, it's a regular dual. Surya Chandrama Sao, the sun and the moon. It doesn't mean two suns and two moons. The dual doesn't apply to each one of them separately, but to the there's a total of two. There's the expression of number conventionally, or rather, no, derivationally, because it's described in grammatical sutras, how certain suffixes indicate plural number. Yeah. There's mention in the Karaka Prakarana how there are plural meanings described by certain pratyayas, and so on. And the Namaprakarana, there's some discussion of that. Ekashesha, as we mentioned, you have a father and mother, but you call them the fathers, the two fathers. You don't do that in English, but in Sanskrit you can. You have one of them represent both. It's really to be understood as figurative, because literally you don't have two fathers. You have one father and one mother. So it's a metaphorized meaning. You know, two fathers, which really means one father and one mother. That's considered lakshana, not literal meaning anymore. Other samasas can be analyzed literally, but when you get to an ekashesha, which is not really a samasa, it's a different kind of combination of words, a different vritti. Samasa is only one of the six kinds of vrittis. Ekashesha is another. There, the meaning is not explainable just literally. You have to resort to lakshana, metaphorical understanding. Well, you have the samasa divara. Well, it is originally a samasa. The derivation is diyavada. In terms of intelligence, he's best. He's excellent. Excellent in terms of intelligence. Diyavada, or as a samasa, divara. But conventionally, divara means a fisherman who may or may not be very intelligent. The derived meaning just doesn't show up in the normal use of the word, divara. It normally is conventionally assigned the meaning fisherman. Although poetically you might force the word into meaning literally someone who's best in intelligence. It would be a play on words in some poetry. There, what you're doing is considered lakshana, because you're not accepting, you're denying the literal meaning of the word. Yeah. You know, divara sustu shastram jananti. The divaras know this shastra very excellently. Well, in that statement, you can't take it literally. The fishermen know the shastra very, it is not true. But if you stretch the meaning of divara to mean people whose intelligence is excellence, okay. But in doing that, you've resorted to lakshana. You've considered that the literal meaning makes no sense in the context, therefore you resort to a figurative metaphorical meaning. We're going to discuss that next, about lakshana vritti. But going back to the two kinds of literal meanings, yes. No, that is a case of where these are cases where we're saying when such and such happens, it's a lakshana vritti, which we haven't described yet. We're just pushing it away, you know, that goes under the other category, lakshana, which hasn't yet been discussed. Yes. Vritti? No, Panini uses that terminology, that there are six kinds of vrittis, ways of putting words together in combinations. And samasa, or words of compounding, ways of compounding. Putting an upasarga on a dhatu is another kind of vritti. It's not really two words, because the upasarga is not a word by itself. It's just a prefix. But there are six different kinds of vrittis. And samasa is a very important one, but it's only one of the six. Ekashesha is one of the six also. It's not really samasa, it's a separate vritti. Because you haven't put father and mother together, you've thrown away mother and put two fathers, you know, put a dual on father. So that's not a regular samasa, that's not a samasa. Devanampriya, which means an idiot. That's a euphemism. He may be an idiot, but at least he's, you know, God likes him. Yeah. It's on.
Ashoka, and they were calling him Devanampriya. Devanampriya, and then
which could be understood as an insult.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Does Krishna Kavikarna Pur explain Divara is Tritiya Tat Purusha? What's a Tritiya?
It's a Tritiya meaning in terms of. What is that? Something. Vishesha Lakshanam is one of the usages of the Tritiya. Yeah. Diya, in terms of. In terms of, he's excellent in terms of. Well, you say he's excellent because of intelligence, that's I don't know if that's really what it says. It says, he's, as far as intelligence goes, he's excellent. He may be ugly. He may not be excellent in terms of good looks, but in terms of intelligence, he's excellent. But that's not the idea. There's a separate idea. Why not use it? It's there. There's a sutra for it. Yeah, Vishesha Lakshanam. That's more appropriate here. You think it's Hetu? Okay, but then... of a verb? Can't be a noun? Well, how about... Okay, take it. I'm sorry. You know Karaka better than me. I studied it years ago. Okay, so let it be Hetu. Okay. Anyway, it's Hetu Tritiya. All right. Now, going back to the literal meanings, and specifically those literal meanings which are derivative, which are grammatically understood from the grammar of the word, there are two kinds, siddha and sadhya. What do you think that means? Siddha and sadhya. They're derivative and idiomatic, but they're both derivative. These are two kinds of derivative meanings. Rudi is idiomatic or conventional. So there's two kinds of yogika. There's siddha and sadhya. Obtained, what do you mean attained? That means you got it in the email or something? You got it for free, you didn't have to pay for it. Okay, what it is, siddha are words that already exist in a language, they've been around for a long time. When you make up one, it's sadhya. Someone makes up a new one, it's called sadhya. Yaugikas tu shabda, it's the last paragraph of 10. Yaugikas tu shabda siddha sadhyascha. So, example of a siddha word is Vasudeva. I don't know any poet who can be credited for making up the name Vasudeva. It's an eternal name. So it's siddha. No poet made it. But the speaker, by his own desire, may concoct a word like Anuka Dundubi Nandana. That's not an eternal name of, it's not well known as the eternal name of Krishna. Anuka Dundubi is Vasudeva, okay. But to call Krishna Anuka Dundubi Nandana, that's sort of novel. We can give the poet credit for making up that combination. And that's considered sadhya. Now, when you're looking at either one of these, no, when you're looking at the second category of created derivational meanings, we're really dealing with compounds here. They're created by compounding two words that already exist, that's all. They can also distinguish whether parivritti saha. Okay, purva pada parivritti saha. Can anybody tell, without looking at some translation, what that means? What does parivritti mean anyway? The verb parivrit, to switch or to substitute. Okay? Now, purvapada parivritti would mean what? Substitution of the preceding word. And saha? What does the suffix saha mean? Sakh dhatu, meaning? Tolerate. No. That's not saha. Saha means tolerating. So tolerating the substitution of the first word. That means you can get away with it. The poet says, Anandaka Dundubi Nandana, and you say, hey, that's a nice name, but I'll make it a little different. I'll make it Vasudev. No, wait. Okay, yeah. I'll switch the first word, and I still have a valid samasa that has derivational meaning. And it's created by me. I get the credit. I don't break his copyright because I made it a little different. So you can switch the first word. If you can switch, if the word tolerates the switching of the first word, that's in that subcategory. Purva pada parivritti saha. Tolerating, switching the first word. Yeah, I guess it, then I looked and said, I thought, well, yeah, but Vasudev Nandana must be an ancient name. It must be there in the Bhagavatam. But anyway, it's given as example here, Vasudev Nandana, as a modified version, switching the first word. Still works. Or you could say, Anakadundabhi Sutta. You could switch. Now, that would be a case of parapada parivritti. Now we can tolerate, in that case, switching the second word also. Okay? Or you can, in this case, you can also switch both words, substitute for both words. You can call the same person Shuddha Sutta, Shuddha Sutta Putra. Shuddha Sutta is Vasudev, he's the son of Shurasen, and his Putra. So you can end up switching both words, and it still works. It still has the same meaning. So that is an Ubaya parivritti saha situation. Okay, and you can, you know, understand how it works in other cases. But sometimes there are combinations that you really can't get away with such substitutions. Like the word patrarata. So what does patrarata mean? Bird, okay. I think so. Let me look in the commentary. Yeah, patrarata is a bird. Pakshi vachi. It means bird. But we can't substitute the word dulla, which can also mean wing, and say dullarata. No, nobody understands dullarata to mean bird. Because dulla can also mean petal. And a ratta can mean a chariot, so it's a petal chariot. I mean, yeah. You get lost. So you can't get away with substituting the word in that case. And then Gurutman is really conventionally a name of, but we can derive it. Gurutman is the person who possesses a big jaw, and that's by convention. It's Anuman, so it's both derivational and conventional, because there are other people with fat jaws. But Garuda is called Garutman, not just anybody with a fat jaw is called Garutman. So it's both derivational and it's yogika, rudi, both. And there, you can't say, this is Pakshavan. Garutman, Garudavachi. Oh, wow. Anyway, you can't. One suggestion that's rejected as not possible. You can't just add the suffix la, which can mean obtaining or possessing, and expect to get a usable word, name of Garuda. You can't call him Garutla, like Srila. That word just doesn't exist. So in the name Garutman, name of Garuda, you also can't substitute without losing the meaning. Okay, so we have three different places, the beginning, the end, and both, and whether it can tolerate substitution or not. So six different cases. Yes. Oh, wing, not jaw. I'm thinking of Hanumat. Okay. Yeah, it's wing. And you can't just say Pakshavan, having a wing, you know, and say that's synonymous with Garutman. It may be literally synonymous, but nobody understands that as referring to Garuda. It's just anything with a wing. Airplane, a bird, anything. A wing of a house. Yes. Yogis are siddhas and sadhyas. And the sadhyas, because they're samasas, can tolerate switching words around or not. Yeah, it's just individual cases. And it's all by convention. It's established usage, whether it can tolerate it or not. Whether it can tolerate is established by convention. Well, that's another example, Gosankhya. Well, Gosankhya means what? Okay. Gosankhya Shabda Eva Go. What? Gopavat. Okay, Gosankhya is supposed to be a word that means cowherd. But you can't call him a Gosankhyana, which is literally synonymous with Gosankhya, but it's just not used to refer to a Gopa. Okay? Gosankhya is a Gwala, cowherd. But Gosankhyana is something else. That's counting, the act of counting cows. Also, Sankhya is counting also. The literal meaning is the same. Well, it can be the act of counting or the person by whom the counting is done, if you take it as a bahuvrihi. Okay. So we have three modes of expression of the meanings of words. Because there's three, we can talk about three different kinds of words. Although actually one word can be all three, can express all three. But in particular contexts, in specific contexts, a particular word will be expressing one of the three. Abhidha, vritti, well, not just one of the three, I'm sorry. It may express only abhidha, literal meaning. It may also express, the literal meaning may be blocked, and then it's expressing figurative meaning. And then, if there's a figurative meaning, or even if there isn't, there may be a subtle suggestion also on top of that. You can have suggestion without lakshana. A literal meaning can directly create a suggestion by itself. So, vyanjanas come from both abhidha, arrive on top of abhidha or lakshana. And lakshana, you have to have a literal meaning first. If a word can't be understood, no literal meaning of a word can be understood, it's just not in the dictionary. The word doesn't really exist. It's a meaningless word. Then it can't, if it doesn't have any literal meaning, it can't have a figurative meaning. To have a literal meaning, that literal meaning has to be blocked. It has to exist. It may not apply in the context, but it has to exist, the literal meaning. So first there has to be a literal meaning, and then in certain contexts it may force you to accept a figurative meaning. And in both cases, when the meaning is just literal or the meaning is figurative, in both cases you may also have a third mode of suggestion, dwani. So you have those modes. We can call the words literal words and figurative words and suggestive words according to how they're used in context. It's really the meaning that is in those three categories, but we can talk about the words being in those categories. But any word is not only in one of those categories. It can be used in various ways. Okay, here's the proper definition of abhidha vritti, or literal, the function of literal meaning. Yasyo charana matrena sahajam yat pratiyate tasya tatra tu ya vritti sabhidha. Now there's a couple of words still missing at the end of the karaka, but he does that, he breaks it up. The next definition will start at the end of this line. That he takes that liberty is taken in such textbooks that use karakas like this. You can split the definition in the middle of a shloka. Well, anyway, that's what's abhidha. That mode of expression of meaning is called abhida, or literal meaning. What is perceived naturally, easily, automatically, by simply the pronunciation of a word, that function of meaning is called literal meaning. Nothing complicated goes on. You just hear the word, and automatically in your mind, you recognize a meaning. That's the literal meaning. No further thought process involved. For example, the word go. There's a literal meaning which is technically defined as a particular animal that has the dewlap and other special features. That's cow. And such a cow, or such idea of cow, the jati, cowness, comes to your mind immediately when you hear the word go. That's the literal meaning of the word go. There may be other literal meanings. A word may have multiple meanings, multiple literal meanings. The word go does. But, at least there's one literal meaning of every word. There may be more than one. And actually, that meaning doesn't refer to the individual, but to the whole category of cows. If it did, then it would refer just to some particular cow. It wouldn't refer to all the cows. You couldn't call all the cows cows if it referred to a particular individual. It would only refer to that one and not to any other. So therefore, proper understanding and normal activity arises from, first of all, understanding the meaning, literal meaning, to be referring to the jati. And then the particular reference to an individual cow or whatever can be understood by akshepa, akshipta. Akshepa here means a logical inference. It's not a figurative extension. It's just putting two and two together by regular logic. Bring the cow. Well, in Sanskrit, you don't have the cow. Bring this cow. Esha go anaya. Now, we got the word esha there. It's a modifier. That helps us. I wasn't told just to bring any cow. I was told to bring this cow. Well, what does this mean? This should mean the one that's close by, or maybe the one he's pointing to or looking at. We can tell from the context of how it was spoken, where we are and what's happening when he speaks it. We can deduce. That's not a further extent. It's still literal meaning. It's just that we use some logic to apply the meaning of category to a particular individual in the context. That means the other words in the sentence help you narrow it down. That's just logic. That's not something other than literal meaning. It's still literal meaning. It's called akshepa. It's not lakshana. Lakshana would be when you say vahika go. The Punjabi is a bull. He's a stupid bull. Then I'm being figurative. He's not really a bull. He's just stupid like a bull. That's lakshana. But when I say bring this cow, that's still literal meaning. But it's been specified to point to an individual by the context. Context of other words and context of the situation you're in when it's spoken. And he uses the word akshepa, so did the previous theoreticians of poetry. Mamata and others before him used this idea of akshepa. It means avina bhava. Avina bhava means not existing separately. Or in other words, logical connection. Wherever there's smoke, there's fire. There's no smoke without fire. There's no smoke without fire. So there's no separate existence of smoke without fire. That's avina bhava. Absence of separate existence. That means a logical generality. Wherever there's smoke, there's fire. So wherever there's a particular cow, there's cowness. and I want this cowness. Well, I guess he's not asking me for just cowness. He wants a real cow. And which one he wants must be the one that's close by. That's just using simple logic, which involves generalities. Anything that has cowness is a cow. If it has cowness, it must be a cow. And if you want a cow, this will serve the purpose because it has cowness. Anything that doesn't have cowness isn't a cow. And if I'm after a cow, then I'm bringing the wrong thing if I bring something that doesn't have cowness. That's logic. Yes. We are still discussing Abhidhavritti. Still discussing literal meaning. But we're at the end now. Turn the page and we start with Lakshanavritti. That will be tomorrow. Yes?
So although it appears like as if Lakshanavritti, it's still...
there are some... There are some philosophers, maybe in the Navanyaya school or some school, that say that all reference to individuals is figurative. But that's a theory, but that theory is disagreed with here. That you don't have to resort to Lakshana to get reference to an individual. It's there by simple putting two and two together in the context. That's not Lakshana. Lakshana is when the original meaning is blocked. If we weren't talking about cowness, but we were talking about stupidity, then it would be the original meaning is blocked. That man is not actually a cow, a bull, but he's stupid like a bull. That's blocking the original meaning. That's Lakshana. Yes? Well, the same thing as Vyapti. Universal concurrence. They always go together. Wherever there's smoke, there's fire. That's called Vyapti or Avinabhava. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of inferences here. We have another word in the sentence, saha, which means Aisha, which means one close by. And where am I going to find a cowness? You know, do I have to go to the highest heaven to find the ideal forms of everything and find cowness in the Akash ether or something? You know, where am I going to find cowness? And the logician will say, don't you know the cowness resides in every single cow? Just find a cow and then you've got cowness. You don't have to go to heaven to find cowness. So there's another logic that says wherever there's a cow, there's cowness in the cow. Wherever there's cowness, there's a cow. So, okay, I need something nearby. I need something that has cowness. And I'm allowed to just get a cow, any cow, and it'll have cowness. And if I get the one that's close by, it'll fit the other word, Asia. You just put all that logic together, and you decide, okay, this animal over there chewing its cud, that's the one I can take. That's the one that's meant. Abhinabhava is the generality. Wherever there's cowness, there's a cow. That's a generality. You don't have cowness without a cow. Because cowness just resides in cows. You don't have extra ones. You don't have, 1,000 cownesses on your pen drive, that you can copy into your computer. Cowness only exists inside cows. So wherever there's cowness, there has to be a cow. It doesn't exist anywhere else. That's Avinabhava. There's no presence of cowness without cow. That's Avinabhava, or Vyapti. No, it's an explanation of Akshepa. Yeah, no, Akshepa is the logical process which uses Avinabhava or Vyapti. All Anumans are based on a simple or complicated use of Vyapti, of Avinabhava. Without general propositions, you can't do anything with logic. If you just make specific statements, so-and-so is a pain in the neck, but that's not a general pattern. It's not scientific, because if you could say, all the people from Bengal are a pain in the neck, and you can prove it, then you have a generality. But if you just say some individual is a pain in the neck, then it's not a generality. But if you have a general statement that's always true, that's Avinabhava. Wherever there's Bengaliness, that's just a proposition, not necessarily true. There's a quality of being a pain in the neck. I'm sorry. That's not true, because it's not true in the case of a number of great souls. And it's not, forget that statement. Is it recorded? Is somebody going to edit this? Hi. Go ahead. Well, you can argue like that. You can say that there's something going on if you always have one with the other. That means they're equivalent. But you could argue that jati is an unnecessary concept, that all you have is individuals. But the logicians say the jati is the real thing and the cows are just impositions. They're just lumps of flesh that happen to have cowness in them. It doesn't. It's never present outside of cows. So you could say the real thing is cow, individual cow. But that's one philosophy. The other philosophy is the real thing is cowness. There's only one real thing involved here because they're always together. That means they must be the same thing. Not necessarily. You can have two different things always together. They still could be two different things, even though they're always together. Like, no, wherever there's smoke, there's fire. It doesn't mean that smoke is fire. So it's not a valid argument that because they're always together, they there can only be one thing there, not two. We're not saying that wherever there's fire, there's smoke. We're saying wherever there's smoke, there's fire. We're not saying it's invertible, that it's both ways. But you don't have real smoke without fire. You can have phony smoke that's not really smoke. But by definition, smoke only comes out of fire. And if you have smoke, there's got to be some fire somewhere nearby. Well, what he says, examples of the things that look like smoke but aren't really smoke. Yeah, yeah, the fire is gone. It's put out. Yeah, okay, so it is fallible. Yes. Separate animal from the countess? Oh, Nilgai? Well, I don't know if it does. There would be a cow then. It would be a cow if it had countess in it. Okay, so bring me a cup of Nilgai milk. Yeah, it's maybe figuratively called a cow, but it's go sadrisha. You know, we're supposed to understand that it's like a cow. No, but it's not a cow. It's not a cow. By all scientific definitions, they're two different species. In fact, the Nilgai belong to the deer family. So, no, there's cow similarity. There's shared qualities. That's just. You know, the quality of having 4 feet, the quality of being a mammal, these are shared by both. But the jati is not shared by both. Jati belongs only to the cows. Otherwise, the gavayas are cows. They're just special cows. But they're not. They're a different species. You call it a blue cow. That's just a popular name. Yeah, that's okay. It's not, see, just having a dewlap is not enough to make something a cow. It's sasnadiman. It has to have a sasna and other qualities also. And it's prani vishesha. It's a particular species of animal. Not just, if you find a dewlap on something else, it doesn't necessarily make it a cow. Some people have. Yeah. They're figuratively cows. Yes. Okay. Yes. I will stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Alankar Kaustubh Ki Jai.